The Composer Series is sponsored by Eric Rath Music, found at ericrathmusic.com. On this podcast, we continue our conversation with composer Robert W. Smith, this time talking about his work with marching bands and drum corps. We talk about how he got started writing for marching band and share great stories from his days with the Suncoast Sound. Particularly interesting is the story from the first year that the drum corps performed a show of all original music, which Robert had composed.
I had a gentleman in the critique, a judge, a dear friend. I respected him greatly. He looked at me. The first thing he said is, "Who in the world do you think you are? Do you think you're Stravinsky or something?" And that kind of took me back.
We also talk about the need sometimes for longer musical thoughts and giving ideas time to develop during a show.
In the marching arts, we sometimes choose music that cannot be dithered down. You can only excerpt so much before you lose the basic essence, the basic components of creative thought and the original idea. So I think out of respect for the music, we've got to be very careful about what we program. So I have to have time for things to develop.
Robert shares information about this summer's productions by the Madison Scouts and the Troopers, also commenting on the use of trombones by the Scouts this summer. A fascinating look at the career of Robert W. Smith in the marching arts on the Marching Roundtable. This podcast is sponsored by Eric Rath Music, found at ericrathmusic.com. With marching shows for every size and ability level, as well as fully integrated percussion scoring, Eric Rath Music provides one-stop shopping for your band program. From La Fiesta Mexicana to The Great Locomotive Chase, a Robert W. Smith composition, to original and public domain shows, there's something for everybody. Log on to the all-new ericrathmusic.com. That's ericrathmusic.com. To hear shows that are available for sale and to see what people are saying. And now we return to our conversation with Robert W. Smith as Dr. Joe Allison and myself, Tim Hinton, talk to Robert about his work writing for marching bands and drum corps.
Well, we want to talk about all of your work in the marching world as well. When did you start writing for marching groups?
Eighth grade.
There you go.
It was a, started writing for my high school band I was playing in. I wanted to play, can we play this? Can we play this? Well, you write it. And so I started writing for the high school band at the time. And then pretty soon I was writing shows for the high school band really greatly impacted by, going and hearing college bands. Where I teach at now is where I grew up in the area here. So I go hear the Troy University Band, the Sound of the South, under the direction of Dr. John M. Long. And, but he had some really great writers writing for his band. But one in particular, a guy by the name of Jim Mahaffey, who lives out in Texas now, San Antonio, and really very, very creative arranger. So had a big impact on me, and started writing then, and pretty soon I was writing the high school marching shows and just kept on going from there.
How about what was your introduction to the world of drum corps?
The introduction to the world of drum corps actually came from my high school director said, "Here, Robert, check this out." And the very first thing he ever played for me, he took out an album of the Troopers with Walter Brennan, Walter Brennan narrating, talking about Jim Jones and the Troopers. I know some of your listeners know that album, the very specific album I'm talking about. Ironically, now in 2014, 2013 to 14, I'm now writing for the Troopers. And so it's come full circle because I was first introduced to the Troopers and, through to drum corps through the Troopers and a recording. And now I'm working on their design team. And, little family bug, I'll have two daughters in the Troopers this summer. So it's interesting how things come full circle. From there, I was listening to then my next love was the Madison Scouts, and ironically, I'm writing for the Madison Scouts now as well. And also was struck with the Hawthorne Muchachos, so Mr. Winter took me to go see some competitions, and I just thought that was the greatest thing in the world, and fell in love with it. I still remember sitting there watching the Madison horn arc warm up, and there was, Ray Baumgartner and Jimmy Elvord sitting there working with that Madison Scouts horn line, and I looked at them and went, "Wow, that's what I want to be when I grow up. I want to be that." And it's amazing now when things do truly come full circle. From there, I decided there was a little Class A corps in the state of Alabama. It was a group called the Charioteers. And so in 1976, I joined this little Class A corps and under the direction of Richard Beasley, and went on a tour and went to DCI, competed in the Class A competition. Class A was the smaller corps competition class back then. And just fell in love with it. So it wasn't that too long after that, though, that I moved into what we call maybe more of an open class, or today's term, world class situation. I was had just gotten a job as a young teacher in Pinellas County, Florida, and it was the year that a gentleman by the name of Robert Cotter started the Suncoast Sound. And so my, minus that little Class A experience, I had my next brush with drum corps really was joining the staff of Suncoast Sound. What many don't know, I was a I was a very young teacher. I was just a little bit ahead in school, so I was, got a job as a high school band director and joined the staff of the corps. However, I was still under 21 years of age. I was only 20 years old, and it just worked out that they happened to need a conductor for the DCI, their very first DCI championship competition. So when Suncoast Sound went to the very first DCI championship, 1979, I was the first drum major of the corps at DCI. And then that was it in terms of my marching. But very shortly thereafter, there was an opportunity to start writing for them. And then the career went from there.
Well, I love that you, of course, you got around to Suncoast Sound. I don't know if you'd be interested to know that a huge number of questions that listeners send in about your work in drum corps have to do with Suncoast Sound. And of course, you've written for so many groups and have so many great, great stories and experiences. But, I think the Suncoast Sound stuff really, resonates with people still to this day. I want to make sure you know that, of course. Jerome wants to know, what are your fondest memories of the Suncoast Sound days?
First off, that Suncoast Sound, that is a very special family for me. That was a group of people that gave me an incredible gift. They gave me trust, they gave me their love, and they allowed me to grow with them. And can never, ever repay them for everything they did. Some of the most incredible musical talents came out of that particular group. They could go on and on and on, but let's take Mike Royce. Principal Tuba of Boston, you know, out of Suncoast Sound. Everybody in the marching arts knows Kevin Ford of the Tarpons program. You know, Kevin literally was with me from age 11 to 21. And so there were just some really amazing talents, great teachers. I had great colleagues working with me. Frank Williams, Mike Rayford, Carl Lowe, Al Murray, Ken Brooks, the list goes on and on, Russell Stanton. So we all kind of grew up together, and there is a bond there that is still so strong to this day. One of my favorite things about going to DCI now is after semis every Friday night, after semifinals, we always meet as a group and get to hug each other and sing together once again. It truly is family. And my entire decade of the 80s was spent with that organization. And so it really defined who I am, not only as a writer, a composer, but also as a human being.
Yeah, absolutely. Chris asked specifically about the Florida Suite, which I think so many people look to. Do you have any interesting stories about that? Because that was very revolutionary.
Florida Suite is near and dear to my heart. Again, Suncoast was a risk with me. What a lot of people don't know, those that are really into DCI shows from yesteryear, half of the 1984 show, which was Suncoast's Vietnam show, literally half of that book was original music, but we didn't tout it as original music in any way, shape, or form. It needed to be about the subject matter. However, you know, 85, here we had this idea of working and creating a piece of music about the state of Florida, and there really just wasn't anything that was appropriate. And so, great, I'm going to write this. And for that organization to, you know, take a risk on a very young composer, is now I look back and go, boy, were they crazy. Absolutely crazy. Probably the most interesting story was, we got to the very first show. This is the very first show and the very first critique. And, you know, I had a gentleman in the critique, a judge, a dear friend. I respected him greatly. He looked at me. The first thing he said is, "Who in the world do you think you are? Do you think you're Stravinsky or something?" And I that kind of took me back. And I thought about it, and I turned around and looked at it, and I said, "No, I most certainly don't think I'm Stravinsky, but I hope when I hit 60, I maybe at least be in the same league or the same realm." You know, but that was and I actually really appreciate that question because it gave me pause to really think about the enormity of what we're doing. But fortunately, we had such great people working with us, and it turned it into a really very special production that that actually Suncoast came back and repeated in 1989 in a slightly different way, but still the same music. And it's a very special piece to me. I've had lots of people over the years say, "Why haven't you published that for concert band?" Or, "Why haven't you published that?" At that time, and Joe knows exactly what I'm talking about, we were in a transition in the 80s when you know, drum corps was still the rogue musicians. Those that didn't necessarily support what was happening over the drum corps world. And so I thought enough of the piece where I decided I thought, I'll wait for the drum corps persona to kind of go by the wayside. Then I'll just hold it, and then I'll bring it back out as a new piece for band and orchestra. And I'm about to start that project now. That's the good news for me. The bad news is that it's never, you know, the music still lives. Everybody still knows it. I was waiting for it, and it never faded with that one. So we'll see.
Well, I don't think there's any question that there will be an audience that would love to play that in the concert band venue if, you know, if and when you do that work. So don't wait for the fade. I don't think it's going to fade.
I don't think it's going to happen. Exactly.
We have some questions now about what brought you to the Madison Scouts. I want to stop right there for a minute and say that as a composer and as someone that's a drum corps fan, I want to thank you for continuing to write and think and create in long thoughts and phrases at times. Joe and I have talked about this many times. The sort of short attention span shows that in music that I find really, really uninteresting. And something like that, you know, famous New York closer that the Scouts played, but it just took its time to grow and build. Like, I was so appreciative that you guys did that. So I guess that's a little off the subject since I shifted to the Scouts, but do you want to speak at all to this idea of the long phrase and giving something time on the field to actually develop?
Oh, yes. That's a subject that is near and dear to my heart and a little bit of a soapbox for me. You know, I am so appreciative to the Scouts and the entire organization to be involved with them. And as mentioned, the impact they had on me as when I was a young man, you know, coming full circle, that was a really great thing. However, when I first joined the Scouts team, I was able to work with a really amazing group of designers put together by James Mason, a Scouts alumni, and of course through Star of Indiana fame. Everybody knows Jim Mason. And, you know, Jim was very clear, music, 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 music first. But what was really even more exciting about that opportunity, the visual designer, the grill designer, was John Vanderhoff. And John is an accomplished composer. Many may not realize that, but John is a great designer, is also a very fine composer. I just loved it when we sat down. I knew I was home when we sat down and we look at the score together, and he's analyzing the score, and we're discussing the inner workings of the composition. Because about half of that show, by the way, the New York show was composed as well. That was original music, and bookended by New York, New York, and Empire State of Mind. Right. And so to have that kind of team to work with, I'm reminded of the day back in the 80s when I was I got up on a soapbox one day, and I was with a group of people, and I took a painting of the Mona Lisa. I just did a quick little printout of the Mona Lisa, and I looked at it and I held that up, and I took some scissors and I lopped off a corner of the image, and I lopped off some. Nope, we don't need that. And I lopped that, and pretty soon I was left with just an eye, and then turned around and held it out to them and said, "Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Mona Lisa." You know, we sometimes choose music. In the marching arts, we sometimes choose music that cannot be dithered down. You can only exert so much before you lose the basic essence, the basic components creative thought and the original idea. So I think out of respect for the music, we've got to be very careful about what we program. So I have to have time for things to develop. We deal in our audience, we're dealing in a truly a multimedia world, and through digital technologies and broadcasts and whatnot, our ideas have got to be shorter. Our ideas have got to happen at a faster pace. This is a different type of audience than it was years ago. However, I don't think there's ever any substitute for an incredible melody, an incredible harmonic progression to support that, allowing some time to breathe and gestate, almost like a fine wine. And so to have the opportunity to do that with the Scouts, Empire State of Mind was a great example of that. That was a true gift.
Well, and Joe, I may be jumping to conclusions, but I think the success of that production and the time they gave it has really impacted the activity. I'm not saying that's the only group that did that, but that was so well loved and the reaction was so intense that I think that I think since then people have been slowing down a little bit and giving some time. Do you agree, Joe, with that premise?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about it. We just, you know, we live in a fast food world, and so many times the shows, as we've discussed quite often, are piecemeal, and Robert was brave enough and talented enough to, you know, to take that amount of time. And as a result, the statement was much more significant as a result. And, you know, it's something that some of us have been trying to talk about for some time. And yeah, I think everything's cyclical, but I thank him. And I do think that that had an influence on writers and designers to risk actually taking the time to let things develop a bit.
Well, thank goodness you did, because that was one of the great moments that we've had in a long time in Drum Corps, and everybody loves it. And Robert, you made that happen. Was there a trick to sustaining it? Because it really was a very long time, and we were all engaged and on the edge of our seat. And I know that's the composition process of building and all this, but do you want to speak to that at all for that particular piece?
If you listen to that chart carefully, that chart, because of its R&B, I'll call it an R&B tune. You know, there's a certain rhythm that comes with R&B that just makes the body want to move. And then also knowing this was going to be in an outdoor marching setting, that's a little difficult to get with marching percussion, battery percussion. So I embedded that the interaction, the groove, is actually embedded within the brass score. And then Tom Hannum, who wrote the percussion book, was so kind and musically appropriate in terms of giving accessory and world percussion instruments a chance to come to the fore there. And I think particularly those big certos that the Scouts had, listen to those big certos, it's like mass parties. Now, programmatically, of course, that was the city of all these different cultures coming back to life in New York, you know, in terms of the context of the show. But the groove that's built into the brass chart that was supported by the world percussion sounds, I think, truly was the secret. And also, to give credit where credit's due, there was a moment of magic in the chart, and this really actually came from Jim Mason. You know, James is a brilliant guy. And he has the ability to listen to something and think about it. He has ability to work with really great artists in a very elegant and professional way. Say, hey, maybe consider this. And there was a moment of magic in there where the chart actually was about 20 seconds longer in its first form than what the finished version ended up being. And it had to do with the moment that we went to the bridge of the tune. And Jim just looked at me. Well, you know, once you consider this, let's cut down that verse right ahead of time. In fact, let's just cut it in half. So if you go back and listen to the original Alicia Keys and then turn around and listen to what we did, you'll find that the bridge actually comes just a little quicker than the original. But that was truly a moment of magic, because that kept the momentum of the chart going, which ultimately ended up in that huge bill when they finally hit that front. And there were 35,000+ people just screaming at the top of their lungs. I really thank Jim Mason for that creative input.
Tim, can I share something really quickly?
Absolutely.
Robert has so many triumphant heroic moments, he may not remember this, but nevertheless, the night the scouts did that program in the Georgia Dome in Atlanta the week before finals, and you know, you and I both think that the Georgia Dome is one of the better acoustic places, indoor places at least, for drum corps. The Robert and Susan and several friends and staff people were in the press box, and some of judging panels and people that had already worked the shows and whatnot just were there. The press box blew up that night. Now, I bet Robert got more hugs in the next 5 minutes after that show was over. Do you remember that at all, Robert?
I remember it well. I remember it.
You talk about magic. It was just one of those moments where it just, you just got to give it up. It was wonderful, and we just all shared that. It was, I won't forget it, and I didn't have anything to do with it except for I got to be there and watch it.
Yeah, that special moment, I'll never forget it myself.
Well, Robert, that's one of the great things about composing for the marching venue is that you do get to have these moments of feedback. You know, like I think a lot of times, I know that you work with concert groups and you get to hear your music played and people tell you that they love it, but there's must be something really, really exciting about a packed drum corps stadium just freaking out over something that you've been an integral part of making happen. That's like such great feedback that composers don't always get that kind of feedback.
Exactly. Concert etiquette in a hall and stadium etiquette at a drum corps show are two totally diverse. And I got, yeah, you know, there's I love them both, but the immediate feedback down to the phrase, down to the effect, and the appropriateness of audience feedback in that outdoor setting is a really wonderful thing. It's also very educational too. You know, I tell students who are studying writing with me in that area, you know, I don't spend my time watching the show. I spend my time watching the audience, you know, and seeing their engagement. And if they're not engaged at a certain point, they're not reacting in a certain way at a certain point, you know, then we've got some design changes we need to implement.
Yeah, really smart. Nicholas asked, oh, actually, I was reading the wrong question. Nicholas asked if you were ever in Wilmington, North Carolina, if you'd like to have Buffalo Wild Wings with him. But that's not the question I actually meant to ask.
Oh, my goodness, Tim.
If you ever are there, you have a free dinner. But what I was going to ask you is Rob asked, how do you see the voicing evolving in drum corps as new instruments become available?
You know, I'm not sure voicing is going to have as big an impact as it is just as new instruments are available. Let's deal with a 300-pound gorilla. Let's put trombones out there.
You're bested, Tim.
Voicing is not as impacted as much as it is the playing technique, but more importantly, expressive opportunities that something like trombones will allow. That's a really important thing. Voicing is going to be pretty close to the same. The range of human hearing, you know, at its best is from 20 cycles to 20,000 cycles. And our psychological response to frequencies, within that hearing range are probably not going to change. And I don't see trumpet playing any higher and I don't see tubas playing any lower. So the voicing is really not going to be impacted as much, but the color, the timbral differences and the playing expressive styles, I think are going to be greatly enhanced.
Take that, Tim.
All right. No, that's great. I'm excited to see how that's going to work. The scouts have announced, didn't you tell me that they had just announced their program?
It was on Facebook.
Okay. So do you want to speak at all to what you're writing for them this year or anything that you're working on for this summer? I don't know how much you could tell us.
Yeah, no, the show is announced. That's not a problem. The scouts, we're doing a show. It's the music of Stan Kenton and Don Ellis. I'm really excited about this. I'm at home in a jazz setting in a jazz environment, and I grew up listening to Stan Kenton and Don Ellis and love their music. The show is really about a progression. If you really look at it, it's the black and white of Stan Kenton's piano to almost the psychedelic nature of Don Ellis and the influence that one gentleman had on the next generation. You know, Stan Kenton became really good friends with Don Ellis. He was literally passed the baton to Don Ellis, and their music is related. You can clearly hear Don Ellis's music. You can clearly hear the Kenton influence, but he was able to take it in some very different directions. So the show begins with Kenton and ends with Ellis, and hopefully people will enjoy that progression.
Can you tell us, are you planning to use the new instruments like the trombones on the field or just as solos, or has that even been established?
We have one statement in the show. There's a piece that Stan Kenton did. It's called Concerto to End All Concertos. And there's a really beautiful line. I still remember listening to my old Kenton albums and actually seeing footage of Kenton playing this in concert. And he would sit there and improv this really beautiful piano solo. And all of a sudden, these four trombones would stand up and play just this little trombone choir, just a short little statement, and he would improvise over the top of it. So we've incorporated that in a very small group kind of setting. Part of the expressiveness of that musical line has to do with the glissando. There's a line in there, and I don't know how well you can hear me sing. We're on a computer speaker here now, but there's a line where he's going do do dwee do da do dwee a do do wee a. There's a glissando. There's a pitch bend that is so important. A baritone would play that da 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 da, and that's a totally different artistic approach. Again, not sure how well the vocal translated over this podcast, but it's a totally different expressive statement. And in order to play Kenton and give I'll call it the artistic integrity that Kenton is due, we're using a small trombone group to play just that one phrase.
I never did hear Dick Shearer play a baritone, Tim. Sorry, I had to get one more in. Sorry.
You're enjoying this.
I am. Now,
what I find interesting is, you know, Kenton has been played in drum corps countless times over the years. It was Suncoast, 1986. I did a whole show on Kenton's Adventures in Time with that group, and I love that horn line and love that show. You know, I find it's interesting that sometimes as audiences, we only want a part of what an audience has, what an artist has to offer. For some reason, you know, there are those that don't want trombones out there when we're playing Kenton, and we're doing it because of this expressive statement in the Kenton chart. However, we want mellophones, and Kenton invented those, basically.
That's right.
You can't just take half an artist. You got to take all of it. You know, you have to take all of it. And if we're not going to use Kenton's trombones expressiveness, then we should maybe consider, you know, not using mellophones. And I'm not in favor of either, personally.
Ooh, Tim. But I'm going to get off that horse now because I think the point is made. Can you tell us a little bit about Troopers? Is that announced?
Yes, that's announced. I'm excited about the Troopers. The corps is doing just great. So honored, and it was so fun to watch them last year progress as an organization.
Yeah, love that show, by the way.
Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. This year, the show is called A People's House, and basically it's a show inspired by the lifetimes and words of Abraham Lincoln. And you're going to hear everything that you would come to expect out of a show about Lincoln. You're going to hear some melodies that are based on American folk tunes, done in very unique ways. You're going to find some things, parts of the show inspired by some Copeland works, a Lincoln portrait. We're not doing a Lincoln portrait by any stretch of the imagination, but it certainly is inspiring. And then, of course, this will end in trooper fashion, with great respect for the past, but looking towards the future. I was so thrilled last year to be able to bring Battle Hymn back to the Troopers in a
yes,
receive in a different way. Again, using different harmonic language than was there before, and so we'll be doing that type of thing again. Except this year, it's America the Beautiful. And,
wow, can't wait to see it. Robert, you were absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much for taking time to all this time this evening to speak with us. I know our listeners are very excited, so thank you so much.
Very good. Great to be here. Thanks so much, Joe. Good to hear your voice again.
Yeah, and let me add one thing really quick, and this is a little bit of a personal indulgence, I should say. I was honored a few years back to get a a little while to spend with Robert and his lovely wife, Susan, who is such a talented woman. And, you know, it reminds me now, this is the first time we've had more than 5 minutes, maybe after a drum corps contest, to say hello. Tim, you know, you and I talk about that great shows make people smarter.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's pretty obvious to our listeners that Robert is one of those unique people that make everybody in the room smarter just by being there. And I mean that sincerely. It's really a gift. You can see as a communicator. I mean, for anybody that wonders why he has the success he has, you listen to this podcast, you don't wonder anymore. And I know that's embarrassing to you, Robert, for me to say that out loud, but just do know that you have that effect on people. Your work has that effect on people, but more importantly to me in my old age, you have that effect on people, and it's something that's prized and valued by a whole lot of us out there, so know that.
Well, I appreciate it, Joe. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. That was great, Joe. Thank you.
You can hear other conversations with great composers at our website at marchingroundtable.com. Just search for Composer Series in our resources area or click on the link where this podcast is located. Thanks again to our sponsor, Eric Rath Music, found at ericrathmusic.com. Thanks to our editor, Aaron Osborne. And thanks again to Robert for joining us. And thanks to you for listening. The Marching Roundtable now has over 1,000 VIP members, listeners, and fans who are following our podcast closely. If you or your company sponsor one of our podcasts, you'll have the ears of these listeners and many more like them who download thousands of podcasts each month, hearing your sponsor message. These listeners also could see your ad on every page of our website, plus see your company name and a link to your website on our bi-weekly newsletter or where our podcasts are located. Find out more by clicking on Sponsorship Opportunities at our website at marchingroundtable.com or contact Tim at tim@marchingroundtable.com. Our listeners are the exact audience you're trying to reach.